Welcome to the Idea Talks, where we discuss big ideas. The Idea Talks is a bi-weekly podcast with Josh Tice and other leaders on big ideas for life, leadership, and ministry. And I'm your co-host, Drew Pollencia, and we are glad you're here. For more information on this podcast, visit ideanetwork.church. Welcome to this edition of the Idea Talks. We're excited about this episode. One, we haven't really touched on this topic ever, I feel like, on this podcast.
Yeah, we haven't, and it's about time we did.
Yeah.
Because a lot of our friends out there right now are bivocational pastors, or what some are calling marketplace pastors, and it's an incredible ministry God has called you to, and we need to talk about what are the implications of bivocational ministry in the modern era, or what does it mean to be a marketplace pastor, and have a focus upon the gospel ministry local church context, yet at the same time, you're spending 30, 40, 50 hours a week outside of the local church. And joining us today is my friend David Beatty and Jay Beatty. They don't just have the last name, they're married.
Yes, for 17 years.
Yeah, 17 almost. Years.
16.
Welcome to the podcast, guys.
Thank you.
Now, we were friends long before you guys were married. In fact, we were friends before Heather and I were married. How do we know each other?
So we went to the same college together and worked in the same area together. In fact, Josh, I was looking really hard for something that I know that you would greatly appreciate. I found it on Amazon for $80, and it's not really worth $80. And you are a good friend, but I didn't want to spend the money.
You just need to tell me about it.
Yes, I just want to recommend it to you. I think you'll know when we worked in our area, there was a certain kind of spray. It's called Steraphim. It's a purple spray.
Yes,
had a wonderful smell. I found
it. You're kidding me.
No, I found it on Amazon.
Wow.
I bought it for $30.
You're kidding me.
Now it's $80. But I looked all over the place. I wanted to get it for you because I know it would kind of bring back memories. And
yeah, it does. I can smell it even now while we're sitting
it's
here.
It's a great smell. It causes cancer in California, but
okay, that's
not,
good
not in Nevada.
So. Well, we're at the border of California. So as long as I don't get cancer, I'll be
it's
fine.
It's weird how the environment just changes like that. Man.
It's a lot of weird things in California. So that's right. We worked at the information desk at Pensacola Christian College so many years ago and have been able to keep in touch throughout the years. And it was at the information desk that you met a beautiful young lady who was working across the way at one of the other departments. Jay, where did you work?
I was working back in Dr. Beamer's office.
Yeah,
the
that's
Vice
right.
President for Academic Affairs. Yep. And this guy here would take multiple trips a day.
No joke.
Back to the mailroom.
I remember.
Yes.
It was a little embarrassing.
Bible
I mean, he really pursued you.
Great.
Oh, yeah. And I remember I would be sitting there holding the bag at the information desk while this man was back there wooing his future bride. That's the way I remember it.
Well, it's true. And I will say that my last semester, there was a time where I needed to visit Dr. Beamer about a certain grade in a certain class, Greek. And Jay was very helpful in getting me an audience in front of Dr. Beamer and making sure that I graduated without any issues.
I said he needs to graduate so we can get married.
She did say that.
This is incredible.
And this was before, like we were just still kind of, you know, flirting with each other at that point. We hadn't gone out or anything, but I did. I told Dr. Beamer, I said, listen, this guy needs to graduate so we can get married.
This is like finding out your doctor barely graduated. And then finding out that his wife kind of pulled the strings. And
nepotism
then
like,
that's why
finest.
I married her. I knew she would pull strings for the rest of my life.
That is
Yeah,
awesome.
I've been fixing things for you ever since.
It's true.
So Jay and David have actually been part of Idea Network for years. In fact, Jay has taught in certain scenarios in different ways with Heather. David's been part of the network and has taught. And we're so glad to have him here for the podcast episode. In fact, a few months ago at Idea Day West in January, we had them talk on the subject of bivocational ministry and thought it'd be something that would be really fascinating for our audience today because that's what's going on. I mean, here I am in a room. I've got Drew across from me, and he works, as you know, in the tech field. And then I've got David. David, where do you work?
I work at a company called Rackspace. I'm a product manager working with all the major hyper clouds, so Google, Amazon, and Azure.
Okay, and Jay?
I stay at home with kids. I help out in the church. I help out in the school.
Okay, very good. So we have three people with real jobs, and then we have me.
That's right. Right.
And,
you get to sleep in every day.
I sleep in every day. I get the paper. I get up about 10, and then I meet somebody for coffee. Then I go home.
That's nice.
This is the, Then they pay for the coffee. It's a very nice gig, but we can't all be in that scenario. But the reality is, David, being a bivocational pastor is something that has always been throughout church history and continues to be. And in fact, some have talked about the fact that it may be the future of the American church. Let's talk about all of these things. Let's begin with your perspective of what it means to be a bivocational pastor. And what about those guys that are out there listening right now? What would they say? Jay, I'd love your thoughts because I know a lot of ladies that listen to this podcast too. What is the unique dynamic of being bivocational in today's society?
I think the unique dynamic is the way that you relate to your church. So your audience knows, your church knows that you work a full-time job and you work in the church. And I think that gives you a certain amount of credence in being able to say, look, I can do it. My family can do it. You can do it as well.
That's a great point. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. You know, when he gets up there and says, hey, guys, I need X amount of hours a month from you, or I need someone to fill in this ministry. And you know, he can get up there and say, I know y'all are tired. I know y'all are busy. I know y'all have jobs because I do too. And it gives him a unique way to connect with people and connect with the people in the church and say, hey, we're all in this together.
It's a great point. I can remember even when I was in college and we were working, doing school full-time ministry. And then we had our jobs. And I can remember for the first time, we just got married, Heather and I. And I remember having worked a long shift, finished classes. I go home barely to pick her up for Wednesday night church. We're rushing back. And I remember I was on the phone with my dad or something like that. And I said, I'm just so sick and tired of this. I don't want to go to church. And he said, now you understand what it is for all the people in our church who work like dogs all week long, who volunteer at the church and then are showing up to church 3, 4, 5 times a week for some of them. And yeah, it's exhausting. But there's a true connectivity between a bivocational pastor and his people that a lot of times people are not going to realize if they're not in that position.
That's true. I think one thing that from a pastor's perspective, when you're pastoring your bivocational, it keeps you realistic in your sermons. I think within the certain paradigm that I've been raised, sometimes preaching can be very aspirational. This is what you should be doing. There should be a revival taking place at every lunch break, and you should be talking about Christ in your cubicle. And, you know, and if people don't know that you're a Christian, then there's something wrong. And I think it makes your message a little bit more practical and more realistic because you have to live it out.
Well, talk about that. What exactly are you saying to your congregation? Maybe there's a bivocational pastor right there saying, whoa, 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 stop there, because I'm preaching in this specific way, but it doesn't seem to even be matching up in my own life. So how exactly can I relate to the people in this way?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that I've realized is that your work is your ministry. It is not the way in which you just earn a paycheck. So the people that you work with, the people that are in your cubicle, the people that you come across every day are your ministry.
And that's good.
And because they're your ministry, you're not there to kind of push them around or you know, that sort of thing. You're there to actually minister to them. God's called you to those people.
You know, it's interesting you say that because on the rise is this new term, right? Marketplace pastor. And that is the idea that I'm not bivocational because I can't yet get the church to give me a paycheck. I'm not bivocational. And there's some guys right now who are saying my aspiration, my goal is to be full-time at the church. And there's nothing wrong with that. You're working toward that. That's great. But there are others who say, no, I feel an intrinsic calling that God has called me to minister outside of the local church in a job setting, and then also pastor the local church that I'm part of. And they call this marketplace pastoring, not bivocational specifically and intentionally, because you're saying I minister in the community. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you think about it, the way in which you have to practically, so I work in a high-tech industry where people are more agnostic in their approach to Christianity. Or if they do go to church, it's because they have a family and kids and they want to get them christened and that sort of thing. So it definitely gives you a different spin in that these are real life people who are incredibly intelligent in their own right. And what you have to do is, you know, influence, encourage, show them Christ before you ever start like beating them up over the head with the Bible. And I think that's where that realistic approach comes from, because no offense to full-time pastors, of course, but sometimes the full-time pastors can get into this world of blogs and movements and influences, and they sit maybe as they prepare messages and just get incredibly frustrated with their church because people are not inviting people from their workplace. And I think that working in the workplace kind of helps you overcome that, and it puts you in the same kind of paradigm that they're living throughout the week.
It seems like you're saying that there's a strong emotional connectivity as well as intellectual and mental connectivity to your congregation that somebody in my position is really going to lack simply because the lack of experience of understanding what this person's life is. Mm-hmm. Just because you experienced it 20 years ago doesn't mean you understand it emotionally like they're living it. So that's a great point. So you're saying that you can effectively minister to these individuals in a more practical way. How have you seen that play out in your particular ministry?
So the way it's played out in my ministry is the culture that in our church. So it's hard when you're talking about yourself and your own church, right? But I feel like the culture in our church, in my mind, I wanted to make sure that my workplace, David, matched the same kind of persona as preaching David. So when I stand up behind the pulpit, I am less likely to scream, yell, and rip faces off, like perhaps some, because that's not who I am on Monday morning when I'm, in a meeting.
Yeah, yeah.
So the personality has to be the same.
You're not putting on a new character.
Exactly.
You're not because playing that's what it a new role. Like, right? Yeah, yeah.
And the culture, like I know the people in the high-tech industry. I know who these folks are. I relate to them very well. And I think the culture that I've naturally developed in that world has also translated over to the church so that our church maybe has a feel that is familiar to those who are in our community.
Okay, so before I get to Jay, I have some practical questions because I'm over here thinking, I've got my sermons to prepare. Depending on your culture of your church or your setup, you might have Sunday morning and Sunday night and Sunday school and Wednesday night and all these Bibles. How in the world are you able to do all of those things in preparation for those? Visit people in the hospital and take care of deacons and staff and all these things. And then at the same time, you've got to be working 40, 50 hours a week. Can you walk us through what your practical week looks like? I did an entire episode talking about my week, right? As a full-time pastor here in Las Vegas, what does your week look like Monday to Sunday?
Yeah, so let me maybe address that in two ways. First, the way we would have handled it 5 years ago when I was the only person doing it. So the church was incredibly forgiving and understanding that I couldn't be there for every baby that was being born, every person that was in the hospital. The church rallied together and actually came alongside of me and helped me in that.
Wow.
So I think it's important as a pastor, and I think one of the areas in which bivocational pastors have an A-type personality where they try to do it all, be it all, and make it all work. And I think that it's really, it will stress you out, it will burn you out. And I think really a bivocational pastor is there to empower the church to do the work of the ministry.
Ooh,
and I think
say that again.
Yeah, naturally helps us, bivocational pastors naturally have to prioritize in a biblical way because you can't do it all.
Yeah, and I love what you said. You're empowering them to do the work of the ministry, which how New Testament is that? I mean, that seems incredibly so much of what the New Testament is attempting to say. So so that's what you said early on in 5 years ago when this is all you. The church kind of stood up and said, okay, let's do the ministry together.
There's great power in that too because, you think about like good leaders will tell you what to do. Great leaders will show you what to do.
Man,
so when
good.
You're coming home, after an 8-10 hour day to go visit people or whatever, there's great power in that because you literally are doing what they are coming alongside doing.
And I think that now, so I get to sit in front of a computer all day. That makes it really easy. Some bivocational pastors don't have that, but we have two staff and several part-time staff, and I'm able to do command and control as I'm working. I'm able to check up on things, do administrative work in between meetings and other things going on at work. The next step up is just leading strategically, setting the tone, letting people know what the direction is, and letting everybody just go and run with it.
I love it. So let's talk about your practical week to week. And before I hit on that, let me just say, I love how you present the concept of bivocational ministry because I think one of the problems that we've seen over the years is this sense of second-class ministerial citizen. When you become a real minister, then what happens is the church, you can take more money from the church. Well, that sounds great, right? And the reality is, I mean, here you are successful in your career. You are also ministering to the church of God. The church is growing. People are being saved and baptized. I mean, this is a beautiful, beautiful thing. And you're able to balance these things, but some might be saying, man, how are you doing it? I'm struggling out here. How do I balance all of these things? What's your weekly schedule look like?
So my schedule's working 40, 50 hours a week. It's a salaried schedule, salaried work schedule. So that means that I'm basically always on call and always need to be available through Slack and email and those sorts of things. The natural rhythm of work allows me to mirror the work of church. So when work slows down in my full-time job, then I can ramp up some things in church and then vice versa. I think just practically in a weekly schedule, number one is I do sermon series. It allows me to prepare one big message and break it up into six consumable chunks. And I prepare for my messages in the evenings, Friday nights. So I know it's not, you're not supposed to do this, but Saturday I prepare messages.
That's totally fine. Sunday your scenario. Morning. We basically say
early
whatever,
Sunday morning.
Whatever's good with you is good with us. You're the Bivo. That's right. You got it, man.
And, but I think that, I think one of the greatest things that come out of bivocational pastoring is what you actually become. So it's not so much of what you do, but who you become. I think what the Lord has done in my life is he has helped me develop the ability to multitask and to do things. I always push myself, but to just improve personally and spiritually.
I like what you said. It reminds me of one of our mentors from the past and the present. Pastor Jim Shetler used to say, it's not what we do in ministry that matters most, it's who we become that matters most. And that's awesome. And in a bivocational way, how much more is that true? And I love that. And I love that you're authentically open and up and saying, look, sometimes my sermon's not ready till Friday. Sometimes my sermon's not ready till early Sunday morning, Jay. And you know, I love that because I guarantee you there are guys listening to this right now going, oh, thank God. I'm okay. I'm not a freak. And the answer is no. You're an incredible minister of God. You're a top tier performer who is able to take care of your family. Man, I'm getting emotional thinking about it. Sorry, that's who I am. You're taking care of your family. You're taking care of business and you're taking care of your church. And you know what? The angels applaud and so do we. That's amazing. But Jay, in your position, you're the one who's obviously oftentimes carrying the burden, the emotional weight of all of this. How do you deal with that? What would you say to our sisters out there who are in a similar scenario?
You know, when we started this, it was a part-time or a temporary thing, seeing the church through a transition. And so for the first year and a half, it was like, let's just get to the end. Let's just get there. And for me, when it became, I remember vividly the night they voted to take the word interim off his title. And it was like, okay, this is life now. And that is when my focus shifted from him being a bivocational pastor to us being a bivocational family. We were in this together. And it's been different things through different seasons. When the kids were young, it was him going to make the visits and me staying home with the kids. And that was how I ministered to the pastor so that he could minister to the church.
That's good.
As the kids have gotten older, I've been able to go with him more and take a more active role. But so what I would say is specifically to them, I would remind them, and this is for all pastors' wives, you are the woman that God chose to stand beside him. You have the talents that he needs for you to have. And your first ministry to the church is to take care of its pastor.
Okay, there's three points right there that are really good. The fact is, number one, I think you said, you are the perfect woman that God picked out for him.
Absolutely.
That's huge because we struggle with this identity crisis, don't we? We think to ourselves, man, if God had given him a better woman, if God had given her that pastor's wife, my wife tells me constantly the struggle that she faces as she looks at more talented and more gifted women in ministry around the country. And she says, I've come to the realization the same way I feel about them is how oftentimes they feel about me.
Probably so, yeah.
And what a terrible thing it is until we realize God in his sovereignty has placed you, the perfect person with the perfect skill set to be in the perfect position and to kind of own it. That was the first thing you thought. And I kind of stumbled over that one. I couldn't get past it because it's so strong.
I think there's great wisdom in what you said too about like, you know, in the season that you're in, you did the right thing and let him go out while your area of ministry was not to go out there with him with four screaming kids or however many, that's my life. But you're ministering him, letting him go and take it the kids. And then when you transition the season, now you're the one that's partnering alongside with him. I think that's really
good. Yeah, I love it. So you were the right person. You're the right pastor's wife, and you talked about your own skill sets, that you have the great giftedness to assist him in his ministry. And then at the end, you said your primary ministry is to minister for the one who is ministering for others.
Yes.
Can you talk to those things?
Yeah, your first responsibility, I mean, you're his wife, you know, before you're anything else. And you, I think, have this blessed role of being able to take care of him in a way that no one else in the church can, and empower him to be okay with him going out and making those visits while you're home with the kids, because that needs to be done. And the church member needs you, and being okay with, for the longest time, our date nights are when we would take people out to talk about the church.
Yeah.
And, you know, a date night just one-on-one, that didn't happen.
Right.
You know, because we're paying babysitters all the time. But date night was going out to talk to other people, and that's okay, because that's where you are. And that's what God's called you to right then. And, you know, maybe he needs to be gone 4 or 5 nights a week. Hopefully that doesn't happen all the time. It shouldn't happen all the time, but it does happen sometimes. There are seasons where that happens. There's been times that I've encouraged him to go to a church nearby to their men's conference. We will be okay. Send him out to rub elbows with other pastors, to be encouraged. And remember that I believe this with all my heart, your first ministry is to the pastor and his family.
There seems to be this sense that, from your perspective, is okay, if he's going to be taking this burden, it's really not his burden, it's our burden.
It's our burden, absolutely.
And if he's going to be ministering to those people, I need to make sure, if he's going to be filling their tank, mm-hmm. I need to be filling his tank.
Yeah.
I find so incredibly inspiring and biblical, in the sense that here he is ministering to others, and you are become the servant of servants, as mm-hmm. Jesus told his disciples. So I think that's incredibly beautiful.
Pastoring is hard sometimes. Yeah. It's hard, and it's messy, and it's yucky, and he needs to come home to someone, I feel, who is ready to encourage him.
Yeah.
And, you know, hun, we're fine here. How many times have I texted you that? We're fine here. Do what you need to do.
I still feel guilty.
Yeah, well, that's okay.
Let's talk about that, the guilt that you feel. I mean, it's real. And for sometimes it might be like very small. And then other times it might be big. But you might be literally, some guy might be at 7:30 at night. He's driving to a hospital listening to this. And he's thinking, man, you that guilt. I'm living that. David, what do I do?
So I think the greatest fear that we have, not just as bivocational pastors, but as pastors in general, is not Satan. The greatest fear is what others think. Mm. And guilt, by its very nature, pastors are people pleasers. We want to serve. We want to know what your need is, and we want to help meet that need. And I think that naturally we can get under everybody's finger, you know, suffer through the weight of everybody's expectations. And that creates guilt, fear, burnout, anxiety, issues. And I think that one of the things that I've done my best is to try to balance that out. I'm trying to avoid people pleasing in ministries. There are a lot of ministries and pastors and people who tell you the only right way to do things. And that right way of doing things doesn't necessarily fit within our world, our culture, or what we're doing. And I have to be able to let go of that and say, while I love this person, love these people, I can do something different and be completely okay and not be under that guilt. Because the more people you try to please, the more guilt you have, the more of a burden you're going to carry. And I think what I try to do is just relieve myself of that. So one thing that I tell our staff is work as when like football practice, prepare, go through the different scenarios. But when it's game day, do everything that you can. And if it falls apart, don't worry about what happens on the field.
Just
do your best.
That's awesome. Okay, so briefly, before I come back to you, David, on the other, how do you then not just avoid the guilt, but how do you practically make sure that there's time for each other? And how do you practically make sure there's time for the parenting aspect? What do you do there?
So the concept that we live under is work hard, play hard.
Oh, I like
so it. There will be times, seasons, where we will spend 1 month every night having to do church things during the day, having lots of big work things to go through. We will do something exciting and fun. Now, because of just because of my job, we were able to, this time last year, go on an RV trip. And we hit all of the different sites from the Grand Canyon all the way down to Disneyland.
Oh, that's awesome.
So for 3 weeks, we were on vacation.
So it's riding the rhythms of life.
Yeah, absolutely. And making sure they don't like completely unplug.
Yeah.
If you are always
and you
trying
have to
be
unplug
there,
from two different things.
Yes.
Right. Yes.
He does.
But if you're always available, people will run you into the ground. They won't mean it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you have 200 people, they will naturally run you into the ground just because of all the needs and all the questions. So you have to be able to say, we're unplugging. We're going to go have a lot of fun. We're going to just rip it up for a couple weeks or for a couple days or for a day. And we're unplugging. And I think just having that rhythm and being able to compartmentalize life sometimes helps.
Okay, so I want to talk about one other aspect, but at the end, I specifically want to hit this idea of where the marketplace or bivocational pastorship is going. Because a lot of those who are church experts, as they say, the prognosticators of the future, are saying specifically in the American evangelical church, that might be more the norm in the future than the rarity. We might be heading there. So we're going to get there in a moment. Before we do, let's talk specifically about this idea of using your skill sets, your business skill sets within a local church setting. This could be true if you're a bivocational pastor. This could be true if you're the spouse of a bivocational pastor, or if you're a full-time pastor as I am. Your skill sets, not necessarily ministry skill sets or spiritual gifts, but your skill sets. Talk about how we can utilize those for the work of God.
So the lie is that business principles are worldly or satanic. The lie is that if it works, if there's a business book about it, then there's something wrong with it.
It's just so funny because I can't imagine how many pastors get their ideas from business books, but they don't.
Yeah, but that's exactly what you hear, right? You
Patrick Lencioni, John Maxwell.
Well, of course, but there is an entire segment of evangelicalism that will point to churches utilizing these business principles or leadership principles and say, look at what they're doing. They're just stealing ideas from the world as if the world's ideas are always satanic in essence.
And I would say that it's not even the world's ideas. Math 1 + 1 = 2. That's not a worldly concept. That is understanding the mind of God, right? You're looking at the cosmos and you're looking into the way God has created things. Proverbs 3:19 says that God founded the earth by his wisdom. He established the heavens by his understanding. The rain and the oceans were created by his knowledge. When you study the rain and the oceans, when you study the earth, you are understanding the wisdom and knowledge of God. It's the same way business organizational principles. This is the way humans organize and work together to accomplish a goal. There's nothing wrong with a business book that discovers those principles using that in a church.
Man, that is huge. And so really this guilt that a lot of pastors are under of, oh man, I got to make sure that I'm unprepared and less organized because yes. I want this to be an authentic, organic work of the Holy Spirit is just baloney because all truth is God's truth. And if it's true within the business world, you can utilize that same truth, which is God's truth, in structuring the kingdom of God. I love that.
Absolutely. And so that we should look at business books. Now, I think we all understand what worldliness is. Worldliness is the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. And so let's continue to define the world based off of the biblical terms. And let's understand that these organizational business books are simply looking into the mind of God and the way that we are organized.
You know, I think there's this concept of chronological snobbery, right? And we think that, you know, either we're ever continuing evolving where we're going to have the great idea, or we look back at the past and say, well, their ideas were antiquated just because they're antiquated. And I mean, perspective is like in history, there are some great minds that probably will never be replaced. I remember that Steve Jobs died. Like it literally felt like there was a level of genius that exited the world that could not be replicated. And the fact is like, we would be foolish in the church not to glean ideas from them. Not saying that everything they do and their motives, I think that's the key. Motive, is it to make yourself rich and amass a fortune, or is it to advance the cause of Christ?
So motive really plays into a lot of this. You're right. So in this business world, can you find negative things? Absolutely. People stepping all over each other just to advance their own agenda, their own career, their own name. But you can find the same in ministry.
I mean, you think about the concept of delegation, right? Early practices of Moses, right? Saying there was too much for him to bear. God wanted to bring leaders around him so they could delegate his responsibility and only the things that he could see. that's what he handled. The one thing book, that's like, that's what it is. Yeah. Like, it's a very popular book right now. That's that concept. Do the one thing that only you can do.
Yeah.
Where did that come from? The Bible. So I think it goes back and forth.
I think one thing that pastors need to maybe embrace is that they are entrepreneurs. They're running a small business. There are many, many books out there that would be a great encouragement to pastors, bivocational pastors.
Oh, yeah, please. What would they be?
So the E-Myth, thinking that every company needs to become a Mark, you need to become a Mark Zuckerberg, right?
Awesome.
You need to become very successful. If you fall short of that, then you're a loser, basically.
My brother recommended that book to me a couple years ago, and I never read it. The E-Myth, he said it's an amazing book. So I got
to
pick it up.
The second time, you need to read
it. I know, I'm an idiot. I got to do this.
Good to Great is, of course, a great book. Tribal leadership, understanding that that all of us, we kind of congregate in tribes. We'll call them different things, cultures, preferential ways in doing things. But I think we naturally congregate into smaller groups of people, tribal, if you will. And so tribal leadership is a great book on how to lead a tribe.
So the future, like we stated before, man, I mean, what's happening in the evangelical American church? We are seeing, quote unquote, a decline in the focused attendance of Christians. Churches are getting smaller. Smaller churches mean we may see in the future an increase on the rise of marketplace pastors, bivocational pastors of a necessity. A bad thing? Is this the end of Christianity in America as we know it?
No, it's exciting. This is great.
Yeah, why?
Because this is getting back to the roots of what a church is. It's a dynamic force in this world that it's a change agent that is seeing people saved at, if you will, the micro level. It's not being overly processed or programmed. The pastor is not becoming the CEO. He is the guy that has to come alongside and make things work within that cell group of believers. I think it's an exciting time. I think that bivocational pastors should embrace this. If they're technically inclined, there are so many certifications out there that they can get to get good jobs. They need to get a job. They need to, that job is a ministry. So that means you need to be successful in that role. Mm. You need to go for performance increases. You need to move up. You need to make more money. You need to build up your skills in your workplace. All of it, God's given you that opportunity. Glean everything you can from that and translate it into the particular church that you find yourself in. That's why God has you in that role.
This is incredible because it may be potentially the most life-changing thing that's been stated on this podcast, not just in this episode, for some, maybe anything that's been stated on any episode, and that is this. If you are called to be a marketplace pastor, a bivocational pastor, it might be that it's not just for the time being to get you to a point. This might be the point. And it might be that God wants you to develop those skills in such a way that you advance and progress and grow inside that field and pastor long-term. And in doing so, it's not I'm pastoring on the side and doing this full-time. This is how I pastor, and on Sundays I preach. Man, that is huge. What would you say to the guy right now who's thinking to themselves, but wait, that's the death of a dream?
Yeah, it sometimes gets back to people-pleasing. Don't be apologetic. Don't communicate to the church that you're in transition. You're going to make the church feel guilty and bad, feel badly about having you in this role. Don't wish and daydream about the future and how it will one day be better. Embrace it. Embrace both worlds. Don't look at your job as just a way to earn income. Excel at it. If it's not the right job, find a better job. Learn to invest in your workplace just as you're investing in your church, because God has you uniquely placed in these two worlds so that you can make a difference.
But when you just look at all that our church has been able to do, basically, really, because you're bivocational. You know, we've been able to redo all the facilities. We've been able to redo the auditorium. We redone our entire grounds lately.
When we started, my dad pastored for 20 years. The church could not pay him. The church was in debt to my dad $30,000. They weren't able to make building payments. The school was hemorrhaging money. Our missions program is hemorrhaging money. We were in kind of a bad position. And I said that I would step in as interim and help the church. Then when the church started growing, I said, I want the money that would normally go to a pastor, I want to take that money and I want to spend it to update our facilities. I want to get rid of the doilies.
We invested it all back into the facilities. Right.
You got rid of the doilies?
We did. And you know what? People survived. It was okay.
It all worked out.
What I think is good about this discussion is, and you know, for the person who's doing this, is not a slam to them, but like, if you're in bivocational ministry, it doesn't mean you have to be delivering pizzas for Little Caesars.
No.
You can't have a successful financial and real career
yes.
that is financially beneficial to you and your family, but also to your ministry. And this is a great example of where you're actually using the funds not only to provide for your family, your four walls, but you're also helping benefit the church and alleviate some of the burden that the church normally feels by having to provide for you financially.
And it's nice too. It's free money, Josh. So if anyone says, hey, we don't want you to paint that wall, you say, well, actually, I'm taking it out of my salary, so it's okay.
So,
and it's made you awesome. A little less risk averse because...
Well, you try it. Why? Because my whole livelihood is not tied up into this thing.
Yeah,
man, that's incredible.
And being able to fail fast, right? That's the optimal place for failure is church. Get in a ministry, try it. If it doesn't work out, that doesn't mean you're not called to ministry. Try a different ministry. So it helps us be maybe more forward-leaning.
Okay, now I'm worried on the other end. There are some of you guys that are full-time pastors, and you're thinking to yourself, maybe I should go get a job. Okay, hold your horses. Some of you might be in a scenario where God has called you to full-time, and that's totally okay. That's mm-hmm. where I'm at. The reality, though, is the pendulum needs to swing a little bit back to where it is in the center, and to realize that if you're out there and you're in a bivocational, number one, you are not a second-class minister of God. Number two, your potential for the future is huge in your personal quote-unquote career, as well as your ministry quote-unquote in the local church, and then suddenly you might see the two merge into one. And that's David's heart, that's Jay's heart, and that's my heart for you. We value you tremendously and are excited because in reality, as many are saying, you're the future of the American church.
Thanks so much for listening to today's Idea Talks. If you would like to reach out to us, drop us an email at joshtice@ideanetwork.church. If you benefited from this podcast, we ask that you take a moment to show your support by subscribing, rating, and reviewing the podcast on iTunes. Thanks again for joining us, and we will see you right here again at the Idea Talks podcast.